Casey Joe.
Casey Joe? Is that how people...
Casey Joe.
Casey Joe.
Yeah, Joe is my middle name, but I think I've actually talked to my friends about this. I think my internet persona has become fully Casey Joe, but most people in my real life call me Casey, but has then evolved into KJ, Dr. Casey Joe, if you want to keep it formal. But yeah, whatever.
Yeah. And it's funny, I know you as Casey Joe also. And we're, it's that sort of like middle name flow. I was just having a discussion with my wife about, we're trying to pick the name for our second daughter. And it's all like, you know, I got to this point, I'm like, middle names are stupid. Like unless they're being named after somebody. Cause if you're not naming it after somebody, then you're like trying to make it like this like phonetically cool sounding name. Like it's either like, okay, we're naming it after Grandpa George, or, you know, now we're trying to, cause we've decided not to do that with our first daughter. We don't want to name it after somebody for our second daughter. So it's like, I'm like, we're coming up with this like phonetically good sounding. I mean, Casey Joe sounds great. You know, it sounds awesome.
So I mean, you can steal it if you want.
I will consider it.
I'd be honored.
Yeah. All right. Why don't you do the original standard podcast intro of who are you? What do you do? Why are you so passionate about it?
Yeah. So hi, I'm Casey Joe.
Well established.
Yeah. Well established now. And my background is sort of a blend between psychology and health and fitness. Man, I'm like, how far back do we really want to go here? I don't want to bore you guys for too long. But I started getting a degree. Undergraduate degree in psychology, actually spent most of my time doing research in prisons, and for a long time wanted to be a prison warden. So there's like a fun fact if we want to throw that in there. I know people are always like, excuse me, you are in a quite different space now than that. But was also at the same time very personally falling in love with strength training and nutrition, spent far too many hours on the bodybuilding.com forums. We've all been there. People understand that. And was becoming more and more passionate about the health and fitness space, became a nutrition coach, was doing that to kind of like make some ends meet when I was not getting paid very much, going through school, that whole thing. And as that passion continued to grow, and was also very aware that most everyone is at least a little bit interested in criminology and forensic psychology and all of this stuff, but not everybody was that interested in health and fitness. And I was also seeing a lot of things right in front of me where, when I was becoming more dedicated to my health and my fitness and doing all this stuff, how it was bleeding over very positively into all these different aspects of my life, really got me thinking from a psychological perspective. If everybody knows they should be doing this stuff and it gives you so much great stuff, why are people not doing it? So I kind of got away from the forensic criminology side of things, started looking at PhD programs where I could kind of get this question potentially answered. And that landed me in the world of health behavior change. So I kind of honestly accidentally fell into more of the mindset world, specifically growth versus fixed mindset, kind of became like the crux of a lot of the research that I did in my PhD. And that was just by coming across the Mindset Lab at North Carolina State University. And they were doing a lot of cool work on basically just like how our beliefs then direct our actions and therefore give us certain outcomes based on all of that. And a lot of the work that the PhD advisor that I was working under had done was in obesity. And so what happens when we label obesity a certain way and people kind of internalize that and then use that to make decisions about their behaviors and what does that mean for their actual health outcomes? And so I was like, okay, this sounds like a direction I could go where I could start to make sense of some of these questions that I have. And I guess fast forward from there, I didn't really want to stay in academia and continue to like beg for money to do the research that I wanted to do. So I started my own health and fitness coaching company. Did that for many, many years, and actually only recently, like about a year ago, sunsetted the one-on-one health and fitness coaching side of my business. And now I'm fully focused on mentoring other coaches to kind of bring more of the psychology and mindset and behavior change from an evidence-based perspective into the coaching world. I think it's pretty evident that coaches get a ton of education when it comes to nutrition and exercise and metabolism and hormones. And there's all of this stuff out there, but ultimately none of it really matters if your clients can't stick to the plan, if they can't stay motivated. So that's all of the work that I do now, mainly through the health mindset coaching certification. That is kind of like my bread and butter program at this point. Yeah, that kind of sums it up.
I made so many notes as you were talking there, all the way back to wanting to hear more about prison, but I feel like we've departed from that. And the one thing on the bodybuilding.com forums, I promise I'll get to like what you're great at and yes. We will talk about all that. But I came across a totally different podcast about something totally different that was referencing that. I don't know if you've seen it. It's like the forum of how many workouts per week you can get in if you train every other day. Have you seen this thread? It's a very famous, for the listeners, a very famous bodybuilding thread. There's a hilarious YouTube video on it. And basically it's like somebody saying that they're going to train every other day. And so they're going to get 4 workouts in per week. They're going to train 4 times a week, but they're going to train every other day. And then of course, you know, that somebody else is like, no, like it's 3.5 days. Like, what do you mean half? They're like, I trained Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday. That's 4 days. And it's like, it's a huge thread that could only happen on bodybuilding.com of people arguing how many workouts per week you'd get if you trained every other day. So if you've not watched that video, go watch that video. Hilarious.
So funny.
Hilarious. And you know, so I know that you've transitioned a bit to the like coach v coach mentorship. So we're going to pose a couple of things to you today in that context of, you know, how to help coaches help their clients better. But we'll also put you to the speaking directly to a listener who's not a coach, which you're super well qualified to do. I'll pivot from our roadmap here. And something came to mind as you were talking is this idea of it's not my job to motivate my clients. And I'm curious what you think of that quote, because that quote's been thrown around and attacked on both sides and said by people and then critiqued by other people. What do you think of that quote?
Yeah. Well, my first very initial reaction is it seems a little bit like this coach who is saying this just doesn't want to take responsibility for the motivation of their clients. So there is like an underlying conversation there that is a very big one of coaches just assuming, well, if this person signed up to work with me and are giving me money, it's their job to follow the plan that I give them. And so that may not necessarily be where that's coming from, depending on the person you're saying and the context and all of that stuff. But that's the first piece that comes up. And what I will say to that is I agree and disagree with the phrase as it is. Agree, because yes, there does need to be motivation coming from you as the client in order to actually take action. It needs to come from you. So if it's your coach who is motivating you, it's coming from this external thing, that's not going to be very supportive for long-term behavior change, because the idea, right, is that you have a coach for a period of time, not for the rest of your life. So if you're removing where you're getting your motivation from and it's not coming from you yourself, then that's a problem. You can become very dependent on someone else in order to quote unquote motivate you. But the other side of the coin here is that I think a lot of coaches just immediately go to this place of, well, if you can't stay motivated, I can't do that for you. And there's my hands are entirely tied. Like there's nothing I can do here, which is not true. And this is like kind of now coming from a behavior change mindset psychology perspective that yes, we cannot motivate our clients and get them to do things. We shouldn't even actually be thinking that way. I hear that all the time too. Like, how do I get my clients to do this? How do I make them stop that? It's like, stop saying it that way first and foremost. But there is so much we can do to help our clients cultivate motivation and figure out what things they really enjoy and find satisfaction in so that they're going to want to continue to do it, to help attach their beliefs and their values to the behaviors that they're doing. It's sort of like what's that phrase? Like you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink type of situation. Like, no, you can't make them drink. But in this case, I sit here and I'm like, okay, well, you could sweeten the water, or you could grab a bucket and show the horse, your client, how to take the bucket, go get the water, and bring it back for themselves. Like there's a lot of in-between nuance here that could be happening. So I think really, it's not like a yes, that's true, or no, it's not. It's that there's a lot more going on within that phrase.
Totally. And I've actually been on both sides of the thought around that quote. And actually, I was on both sides in the last 15 seconds trying to decide where I'm sitting as of today. But you said something really great that I think underpins just the reason that it's a complicated phrase, which is I get a lot of clients who want to do a plethora of different things. They want to improve overall health. They want to lose weight, build muscle, run their first marathon, whatever. And like, I'm not going to like push somebody to do a thing they don't want to do. Like, I don't think like I'm not, if someone's like wants to do a bulking phase, like I'm not like going to push you to do that. And that's an interesting thing, but that's not the kind of coach I am where I'm like, oh, you should absolutely do this thing. And you should do it for these, or if you don't do it, there are these consequences, you know. But you said helping your clients cultivate their own motivation. And so that is absolutely something I will do and would like to do and think coaches should do. I think that distinction between I'm motivating you insofar as I'm either dragging you through this, or I'm constantly nagging you about it, or I'm guilting you or shaming you or whatever sort of tactics. I wouldn't recommend doing that, but helping clients cultivate their own motivation for something. And I think that that goes into, correct me if I'm wrong, I think that there's a thread here to goal setting and helping your clients. Because I think that the start of feeling motivated to do something is having the right thing that you're aiming after. And as a coach, that's something that I really want to help people do. Cause I know if we find the right thing, the thing that is matches what you say you want and what your values are, then that's a good way for us to get, you know, a lot of easy motivation. Right. Let's jump to some goal setting chat and talk a little bit about maybe some of the problems that you see with people who, when it comes to setting goals, and maybe what are some better ways to do that if people are trying to, you know, if somebody's end goal is to build a habit and be consistent with it.
Yeah, absolutely. It kind of brings me to conversation around SMART goals. I'm assuming you're familiar with SMART goals. They've been actually looked at this a few weeks ago. And I think the guy or gal who originally said, yes, this is the way we should be setting goals and created this framework, it was like 1981. So I'm pretty sure we're like due for an update. But as things go, you know, it just continues to stay here and it becomes the gold standard just because it's been around for a long time. And I don't hate SMART goals, but I do think that there are, especially when we're talking about health and fitness behavior specifically and making those long-term behavior changes, that there are some updates that should be made. The pieces that I do like, if we're talking about SMART goals, okay, make sure that I can remember every piece of it. Specific, measurable, attainable, R is
realistic.
Realistic, and T is like time-bound, I think. That sounds right. So that's the original framework for those of you who are like smart, never heard this before.
It's relevant. By the way, hold on. Sorry. It's relevant, not realistic.
Oh, relevant. wait, neither.
Attainable is kind of, I guess, a synonym for realistic. So fine. Relevant. Yes, sorry. Yes, I had to Google it. I was like, that does not sound right. Yeah.
Yep. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. So I do like the first two components of specific and measurable, because I do think that those are pieces that are often missing. It's, I want to get healthy. I want to build muscle. I want to change my body composition. I want more energy. Those are not very specific goals. And we're talking about this in December going into the new year, and people are thinking a lot about like, what do I want to do differently in 2026, call it a resolution or not, whatever. And with that, if your goal is really just, I want to lose some weight, get healthier and feel better. Okay. That's great. But like, what does that actually mean to you? And I think that that's what's missing from that sometimes. It's, yes, specific is better, but why is it better? And specific is better because if you can get to something specific, then it makes it more clear what the things are that you actually need to do for that. And it makes it more clear why it's like actually valuable to you versus just like generally I should get healthy, you know, is usually where that is. So do like that. Would say let's get more specific. Measurable, also love, because you can't improve what you don't know needs improving. You can't measure your progress if you're not doing anything to actually pay attention to that. Of course, there's a lot of traditional ways to do this. People track their macros, they track their body weight, they track their strength progression. It doesn't always have to look exactly exactly like that, but there should be some kind of way that you are self-monitoring as you go through. And self-monitoring is something from behavior change research land that is consistently talked about, very well validated, helpful thing that you should be doing as you are setting and pursuing goals, is to actually be self-monitoring and paying attention. And this is where coaching can be really helpful too, because you're kind of like having a buddy who's helping you with that self-monitoring process. So I do like those two pieces. After that, okay, so what
I got
is
you.
It? Attainable?
Attainable, relevant, yeah. And timely.
Okay. So attainable, I have some reservations with this piece, mainly, again, when we're talking about health and fitness behaviors or weight loss being a big goal for so many people. Like, we actually have research to support that people who maintain weight loss, looking at what are the aspects of those people who were able to do that, a not very predictive variable is having attainable goals or having easy goals to reach. So we hear this all the time, you know, like, set goals that you know you can hit. Don't like set something too crazy, otherwise you're going to get unmotivated or whatever. But actually, the research doesn't really support that, meaning that someone who has lost a significant amount of weight, has been able to keep it off, chances are they weren't thinking about and did not set like a relatively easy goal for themselves. So that's why I'm not a huge fan of the attainable part. Instead, I actually have like a smarter goals framework, and that's what I'm kind of getting my way through here. So instead of attainable, I add additive. So something that we're adding in, because when we're setting goals, we should really be thinking about like, what am I adding to my life? What am I giving to myself versus the classic, like, what needs to be sacrificed? What needs to be taken away? So instead of like, I have to take away Netflix to have time for the gym, could it be I get to add activity because it's what's going to make me feel better? And this is kind of just comes back to mindset and how you're speaking to yourself and all of how the beliefs then lead to the actions, which leads to the outcomes. So you're kind of like starting there. And again, research to support, the more we can kind of like see it that way, that things are being added and we're being given something versus like taking something away from us and like feeling that loss, is going to be more helpful in the actual goal setting processing process. So that's what I have there. So the next one, realistic, is the original one, I think.
Relevant,
right?
Yeah, relevant.
Relevant. So with relevant, again, I'm just like, and to me too, like, duh. Attainable, relevant. Yeah, yeah.
Like, relevant's
yeah,
like, duh. It, like, if I want to like run a faster mile, like, we probably have to do some running. Like, you know, like, that's relevant. You know, like,
right, yeah. Exactly. And I don't think that's like entirely helpful. That should be a given, right? I'm not sure that we needed to use an entire pillar of our framework for that piece. And instead, I for R think rewarding. So how can we make this personally rewarding, like personally satisfying? What aspects of this feel rewarding to you? And how can you add that into your goal setting and planning process? Because the more we see it as personally rewarding, the more we're going to see it as valuable. We're going to see the utility behind it. And if all those things are in place, then you're going to be more likely to actually do it. So I do like that. And then as far as T, time bound, I think, again, hard for health and fitness goals, because if we're like, okay, it has to happen by this time, other stuff happens in your life. It's really hard, especially from like a weight loss perspective, to put a timeline on things. Like, yeah, it can be nice to have like a lofty timeline to kind of be like seeking, or if you're like getting married or something, you have that as a goalpost. But generally, I instead would say, maybe think more timely, meaning like, look at all of the time around you. How are you feeling right now? What are the stressors that are coming up in your life soon? Does it make sense for you to actually pursue this goal? How does it need to be adjusted based on what you have coming up in the next 3, 6, 12 months? So just making it timely based on your life rather than time bound based on a date that it has to happen by. Because also, if we're really relying on that, and then we get to that time and we haven't achieved the goal, then what? You just failed, and that's the end of it. So again, coming back to health and fitness goals, it's really, the goal is to continue to do these things forever. So setting a time bound goal, yes, you can make like maybe little small ones throughout the way or whatever. If you have something like a competition that's coming up, so now it's time bound for that reason. But yeah, that's kind of my thoughts on that one.
Yeah. I think the first two are a must, right? Specific and measurable. I think we have to take a general concept of something we want. I want to get healthier or fitter, better cardiovascular shape, or build muscle. And then, okay, I want to get specific with that. And then let's figure out what's the metric we're going to track so we know that we're doing it. I find that those are, people get that far, you know? I think people tend to get that far, at least by the time they've hired a coach, they're that far along. Yeah. You know, sometimes it's a bit abstract. You haven't gotten that far along. By the time people are meeting somebody like you or me, they're a little further along and having thought about this stuff. So I'm usually meeting somebody who's gotten that far and they're like, hey, I know I need to track my protein, track my fiber, get more steps, get more workouts, get stronger, whatever. I can't shake this feeling, and I don't want to say that this is 100% true, but I just want to air it, that sometimes I don't know. I want to talk about people picking the wrong things. Maybe how do people pick the right things that match with their values? And because I often find a lot of people are like, hey, I have this goal and it's specific and I know how to measure it. And yeah, let's go. Let's do it. And then there is not follow through. There is not follow. Uh-huh. I mean, it's specific. It's measurable. We know what we're tracking. We are looking at, you know, we've taken the goal. We know what we need to track. We've begun tracking with it. And then we don't follow through. And to me, that's like, is this the wrong goal for you? Is this the wrong strategy for you? Are you just in a place, time in your life where it's not good? You know, how do I know if I've picked the wrong goal that does, you know, how do I pick goals that really match my values? How do I know when I've picked a goal that really matches my values, or I've picked something that maybe society has emphasized that I should seek, or, you know, my environment / my history, my familial history has pushed me towards? How do I know when I've picked a thing that matches my values? I think that there's something to, I'm going to bank more on, like, you know, you could say, okay, it's a specific goal, it's measurable, but then it's kind of has to be a thing I really actually deep down somewhere care about. And how do I know I've done that third thing? Or how do I know I have messed up in the direction that I've chosen, or the goal that I've chosen?
Yeah, that's a really good thought. I want to go to a place of like playing out the script or doing a little bit of future pacing. So if that's what you're like, okay, now that I have this goal, I have this like mini plan kind of mapped out before I actually get into this, I want to make super sure that this is the best goal for me and this is the best process for me. So doing a little bit of like a self-check in this way is, again, what I'm kind of thinking of playing out the script. Let's say, okay, now you're looking at like this next 6 to 12 months, you're going to be pretty dedicated to this thing and you're adjusting things or working on your beliefs around it, all this stuff. You get to the end, you have reached the goal, a little bit of visualization, if you will. How does that change your life? How does that change who you are? What does that mean for your relationships, for your job, for all of the things in your life that are tangibly important? How will achieving this goal up-level those things? Because that should be the goal, right? Like, why are we going after this thing if we don't think it's actually going to add, kind of going back to that same conversation, add to these other areas of our lives that are the most important to us? So maybe like taking stock of what that would end up looking like. And if you go through that and you're like, huh, yeah, nothing would really change. And in fact, this might put more stress on a lot of aspects of my life. You're right. I don't really feel like I need to lose weight. It's just that something I felt like I should be doing. And I think in this process, you can uncover a lot of that. Like, is it really coming from you or is it coming from somewhere else? So I think something like that could be really valuable, as well as just the simple question of why do you want to do this, you know? And I think to your point, a lot of people may not even know because they're not asking themselves that. They're just like doing it because they feel like they should, because other people are doing it, et cetera. So why do you want to? What enjoyment and satisfaction are you getting out of it?
Can I jump in? And there's a quote, there's kind of a stupid saying we all know. And it's how bad do you want it? And it's so funny that when I say that, I like it kind of paradoxically or whatever, I mean it honestly. Like, it's meant almost as like a pump up speech. You know, I think of like Rocky in the, he's in the woods with the snow and the log. That's not what I mean. It's not a pump up speech. It's a genuine question. I think your answer was wonderful. It was essentially like, hey, take a second and be introspective about why this is important to you and what it would look like if you did it. And I just don't think we do that. We have adopted certain values from society, from our families, from our friends, from our environment. And we haven't stopped to think about why this is important to me and how my life would change seeking it and how it would change getting it. But I often will ask people, how bad do you want it? And of course, I'll give them this monologue afterwards of like, I'm asking you that genuinely, like, how important is this thing to you? And tell me if you've had this experience with either coaches or clients that like, I have again, I like coaching people with a wide range of goals, but I do have a section of clients who will, one of the things that they'll gain from our time coaching together is actually finding out that the goals that they came were not actually their goals. And they might not have lost any weight or changed their life in any meaningful way other than realizing, hey, like that thing I was after, maybe it was a six pack or maybe it was, that's actually not something I really want to change my life meaningfully for. I don't want to sacrifice for that thing. And, you know, somebody asked me the other day, why don't you have why don't you spam? That was the word they used. Why don't you spam before and after testimonials? And I was like, because a lot of my most just favorite experiences with clients are things that you can't put in a picture like that. Do you find that that's an interaction you've had with coaches or clients once you go down the track of asking why, you've opened the door that this might not be the right thing. And that's scary sometimes for people because they might be breaking down this goal that they've held on to for so long and letting go of that and realizing actually that isn't the thing I want. That can be, it's like mourning a version of you that you had hoped for a really long time. Have you had experiences like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think especially when we're talking weight loss, you know, or like mainly in my coaching career, I've worked with women, like no surprise. And a lot of it's like, oh yeah, my mom was doing this. And then I got into this when I was 15 and started with these programs and did this. I was like, oh, so we're talking about like a 25 years of you working towards this thing. And then, yes, we start having conversations and it's like, oh, wait, whoa, maybe this isn't actually even my goal. Maybe this is not where it's coming from. It's coming from all of these other sources. And yeah, that can be a little bit rattling, but at the same time, relieving for a lot of people, because especially if we're talking like decades, a lot of the time of this like yo-yo dieting back and forth, trying everything under the sun. And now it can feel like perhaps that's why it never really stuck for me. It's because it wasn't for me this whole time. And that doesn't mean at that point that the conversations would not go into, well, do you still have a desire to lose weight at all? Change your body composition at all? Where are we at? And then now they could confidently say, yeah, I think I would like to get stronger, change my body composition, long, lean muscles, you know, the things that all the girls want. So it has that conversation, but then it's like, okay, so that's coming from you. Now more about why you want that now that we've discovered that your prior beliefs were coming from someone or somewhere else. And so you can kind of change that trajectory. Doesn't mean that people are fully abandoned that and say, you know what? No, I just want to run a marathon. Actually, that's what I've been wanting to do this whole time. I had no idea. But it's now coming from them. And that is honestly such like a core theme in general with good coaching and also like how to stay motivated yourself is that it's coming from a self-determined autonomous place. So always coming back to that. And that's where those conversations could go.
I love that you got there because the in my notes, the word that's bolded right now is autonomy. And the question I want to ask you is, you know, of course that's where we were headed, but you got there. That's awesome. It was awesome watching you work to that exact word. How important is client autonomy? And we could talk about from a goal setting perspective, we can talk about, listen, most people listening to this will be on the air quote client end of things. So how important is that? Is it for them to, one, accept the responsibility that they should have autonomy and then also kind of advocate for that autonomy? And why is it important?
Yeah. Ugh, it is so important. There's actually, so I have the ABCs of what will make us as humans feel more motivated, stay motivated to do things, want to do things. A is autonomy, B is belongingness, and C is competence. And this is all coming from self-determination theory, long, long, long-standing theory in behavior change land. So if we're in the, I actually tell coaches to use this all the time as like an assessment. If you have a client who's struggling to stay consistent or figure out what they want to do, is to use the ABCs, autonomy, belongingness, and competence. Where do you think that might be lacking? And also hear this from coaches all the time of like, oh, this client is just like so dependent on me. They ask so many questions. They're doing all these things, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay, well, that's because you have not been very autonomy supportive in your coaching, most likely, right? So really, really important. As much as we just want to be told what to do, like, coach, just give me the numbers, just give me the plan and I'll do it. that is not really helpful from a long-term behavior change perspective, because it does leave you dependent. If you're just like following along, you're not really learning anything. You're not learning how to make decisions for yourself, how to make adjustments when necessary. So autonomy is honestly, yeah, it's really, really top of the list. As much as we do want to push back and just try to make it easier, use less mental resources and just be told what to do. But ultimately, having the client in the driver's seat next to the coach is really the best route to go.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you will, if you are in the coaching business, you will encounter scenarios like that. I don't want to say often, but more often than not often, where somebody is arriving to you and saying, just tell me what to do. I'm ready to do it. You know, the flame is lit, the motivation's ignited, and they just want you to give you the plan. They're going to get in and go. And I'm curious about whether or not you think there's an element of if that can be something a coach leans into and says, okay, I'm meeting you where you're at, which is yearning for this thing. And this is a delicate dance, a relationship that we're building. Can it be something that autonomy, that shift from I'm more just understanding what you're saying and applying it versus we're shifting over time to autonomy? Or do you think it's like right out of the gate, we need to break down that barrier. You need to be in the driver's seat. You need to be making decisions. Or do you think that that's something that can develop over the time working with somebody?
Yeah, I'm like immediately smiling because this was almost verbatim a question that one of my students asked last night on our live call. Like, what do I do if I have a client who really does not know anything about nutrition and fitness, is very lost, is just getting started? I can't just go to him and say, well, what solutions do you have? Like, what ideas do you have? Because they're going to come back and say, coach, I know nothing. That's why I'm here, right? So I will say, everything is always going to be client and context dependent, right? So really getting to know your clients, building that relationship and understanding where you're at with them should actually be telling you exactly how to coach that person. So there are different ways to insert this too. Like, it could be, like I was just saying, certain situations where maybe a client is struggling with something, they're coming to you, they're looking for solutions. And you could say, I have some ideas for you that I would love to share, has worked with a handful of my clients in the past. That said, you are your own person, you're a unique person, and you have all of the information about what's going to work for you at the end of the day. So if you're up for it, here's a couple things that I'm thinking of, you know, option A, B, C. Tell me what you think of each of these options, or maybe if you have an option D, I would really love to hear that too. So now in this case, it's like you're still providing the wisdom, sharing your expertise, talking them through, but also making it very clear that they are the decision makers at the end of the day, that they are the ones who have the information that is actually going to help decide the best direction here. It's not that you say, no, option A is what we're going to try next. Let's see how it goes. Because also then if they're saying, I kind of like option B, but what if we like throw in a little bit of this, and you're like, fabulous, love it, let's run with that. Now the client also feels like, that was my idea. This is the thing that I decided I wanted to do, versus, again, which we think, just want to be told what to do all the time. But then there's also the aspect of, it's actually called psychological reactance, when people tell us to go do something and now it's like, that, I don't want to do that. You told me to do that. Like, we get this all the time too, when you talk to like your parents and you're encouraging them to eat healthier or whatever, or take fish oil. This was my mother, trying to get her to take fish oil and how helpful it is. And wouldn't do it, wouldn't listen. 2 years later, she has fish oil in the cabinet. I'm like, oh, so you decided to start taking it. Oh my God, I saw this thing on NBC about how great it is. And I'm like, okay, yeah, anyway.
My family share an Amazon account. And so it's my account. And so I get all the emails. So every time somebody buys something, they get an email. I love my mom, she's not gonna listen to this, but like the amount of stuff where I text her, I'm like, mom, if you buy another apple cider vinegar gummy, like I will jump off. If you buy another women's specific creatine for like $45 when you can get the same amount for like bulk supplements, I'm like, we must have a talk about that. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm curious how much, first of all, I want to double underscore bold italicize what you said, which is you giving the client, or in this case, if you're the client listening, like having autonomy isn't necessarily coming up with everything you're going to do from scratch by yourself. Like, autonomy is a feeling. You need to feel autonomous. And so, you know, you might say, well, I really want to improve my gut health. And then your coach is like, cool. Like, I'm not going to be like, how do you want to improve your gut health? I might be like, hey, here are the ways we can improve gut health. And let's talk about how to do each of those things. There's a bunch of options on how to maybe eat more fiber or include more variety of fruits and vegetables. And then giving options, having a conversation, developing a list of options, talking about the pros and cons. It doesn't need to be, and I don't want coaches listening to this to think that they should never be providing any information
right.
or context or clients to think that they're supposed to come up with everything themselves. That's not. It's supposed to feel at the very least collaborative. And then if it's not, if we have to lean in either direction, it should be like net client autonomy of, but I absolutely love that idea, that just a reminder of like, this doesn't mean the client needs to come up with everything for themselves from scratch. It does mean that the client should hope their coach is involving them in the decision-making process, even if it's here are all the lists, here are all the options to achieve that goal and the pros and cons of doing them. Let's talk about which one is right for you. I think that that's a really great, because I think people can get caught up in autonomy. And the first time I read motivational interviewing, which is part of what we're talking about here, I think I probably got a little carried away in the open-ended questioning probably did a disservice to people because it was too much of a blank box. Every question was too much of a blank box. Rather than like, hey, I'm the subject matter expert, I can probably populate some good options and to talk about, and then I can provide the autonomy to, or I can help my client develop the autonomy and help them kind of choose and be collaborative. So I really like that idea. I just think people can get carried, we can get carried away on that and put too much responsibility on the client and then abdicate too much responsibility as the coach.
Absolutely. Delicate dance for sure.
I want to ask you about big changes versus little changes and maybe what the research says, but also just in practice, what you've seen from, and you can always use something like the size of a deficit, right? As like a microcosm of how large of a change you should make or how many different habits or if I'm eating a little protein, should I jump to eating a lot of protein? If I don't lift weights at all, should I jump to a program that's going to be a huge time commitment, but yield faster results? Or should I inch my way in? It's like, I'll shut up in a second here. It's so funny. I use this AI thing. This, you can see it. This like note taker. And one of the things that it does is it lets you know when you're on a monologue. And it's like the idea being like, you should shut the heck up and let your guest or whoever talk. But like the thing just spams me the whole time because all I do is monologue.
But okay,
for context, big versus little changes. A bigger change is one that is presumably a larger commitment, but also a higher magnitude or rate of result. And then a smaller goal would be one that you can probably be more confident you can do consistently, but probably won't yield as large of a result. And so do we go for, you know, more consistency, but, you know, then we have to stack those habits up before we start to feel a real effect? Or do we jump to a slightly more ambitious goal that, you know, maybe is harder to be consistent with, but will lead to a larger effect? How do we figure that out?
Yeah. I love this question because I think you're going to be really interested in what I have to share with this. There's research that supports both sides. So some research saying like, set that big, hairy, scary, long-term outcome goal. Keep that top of mind. Put it on a sticky note, put it on your phone background. Not saying the research literally says like put it on your phone background, but you know, like keep that big goal in mind and focus on that, even if it feels like light years away. And then there's other research that supports, no, don't do that. Let's talk about what they often use the term sub goals, smaller goals along the way to that long-term outcome goal, but don't put all of your focus on that because it can start to feel less motivating because it feels so far away. Whereas these things you can start to like jump into much quicker. So there's research to support both sides. And there's actually one researcher came out and noticed this, like, what's going on here? Why are we supporting both of these things if they kind of like contradict each other? And I believe it was actually his dissertation work that went through this and tried to like pick it apart and see what's going on. And what he noticed was it's actually both. The answer is both of them, but at different times. So let's say just for all intents and purposes to make this easy, you have a weight loss goal that's going to take you about 12 months. So we're looking at a year's time. So that's long time for now. You got a lot to do. Lot of work to go into that. So according to this review of all of the research in this area, the best practice would be for, again, I'm just making up numbers here, for the first 1 to 6 to 7 months, let's focus on sub goals and these smaller goals that'll give you the momentum and the wins and keep you motivated. And there feels a little bit easier than that big, hairy, scary goal at the end of 12 months. And then at some time point, we're again, all intents and purposes, from 7 months to 12 months, you can kind of switch your focus to really paying attention to that big goal because now it feels a little bit more like actually attainable because you've made some progress. You've added some habits and behaviors into your life that are supporting that. You can see the light at the end of the tunnel, whereas before it was entirely dark and you're like, where is it? How am I ever going to get there? So that's kind of like generally a recommendation based on some research that's out there. And with that said too, we also have research to support the importance of moderately challenging goals. So we're not in a place where this is so easy. It's a layup. It's not actually like, I don't really feel like I'm improving or getting anything out of this, but also not so challenging that it's like, okay, I have achieved this one time in the last 2 months. And like, that doesn't feel good either. So how can we do something that it feels like we're working towards something, we're actually accomplishing it, but it's not totally out of the realm of possibility. And it's not so easy that it's something that you would do every day anyway. So yeah, in combination with those things, I think is kind of where I would land.
Yeah, of course, not an easy answer. We're essentially balancing the pride that you get from doing the thing you said you'd do versus the result you get from doing it. And it's like, the smaller the challenge, the more consistently you can say, I'm doing what I said I would do, and I can build that confidence. The larger the goal, for those who hit it, will be motivating in and of itself, or the results can lead to motivation, let's say. I will again use weight loss as an example, but this has nothing to do with weight loss. But one of the biggest predictors of weight loss at the 1 to 2 year mark is weight loss at the 8 to 12 week mark. And that is just, again, one example of, people who saw early results were more likely to have maintained weight loss at the 1 to 2 year mark. Now, that is not saying that has nothing to do with what you, listener, should be doing on an individual level. That has nothing to do with what you should be doing on an individual level, because even though that is true, that does not mean that those people lost at an incredibly fast rate or they crash dieted. It could just mean that early success predicted long-term success, and early success maybe pointing to an amount of weight loss that felt motivating for those people. And I use the training example. It's like, if you don't train at all, I'll use my dad as an example. My dad doesn't lift weights. He just started to lift weights. And he's more motivated to do 3 or 4 workouts a week than he is to do 1 to 2 workouts a week. Because in his mind, he's like, well, if I do 3 to 4, I'll really feel what this is doing for me. And I'll be able to channel that. That will excite me, and I'll be able to kind of use that to continue doing it. Whereas 3 to 4 is way bigger commitment than 1 to 2. He'd be way more consistent with 1 to 2, or he'd be way more likely to be consistent with 1 to 2. But he's like, yeah, but I won't feel anything. So even though I time-wise can be more consistent, I won't be as motivated. Do you mm-hmm. think that that's on an individual level, and that there are just people that are going to hear what I'm saying and say, oh, I'm a small change person, or oh, I'm a big change person? Or is it individual, times context? Is it, is it a personal thing? Is it a contextual thing?
Yeah, I think all variables are at play here. There's always so much nuance to every one of these conversations. Even when I'm saying, hey, the research supports this, there's still outliers, obviously. Like, we're talking about data in the aggregate and the averages that we're comparing here. So yeah, absolutely, it can be different. And for instance, someone like your dad, then maybe if someone were to go to him, he's working with a coach, he's working with you maybe, and you said, hey, if 3 to 4 days isn't something you can consistently hit, like, let's just get 1 to 2. Like, that's plenty to still get something going. But he's over here thinking to himself, yeah, but I actually feel like I would be happier and enjoy and be more motivated to do 3 to 4 a week because I know what that feels like for me. It would actually be doing the opposite by saying, like, you have to start at 1 to 2 workouts per week, And like, chances are, like, down the line, maybe he'll get some in and then he may not even be consistent with that anymore because he doesn't feel like he's doing enough and he's not accomplishing enough and that doesn't feel good to him. So yeah, very interesting example in the context of this conversation too.
Let's talk about falling off and getting back on track, and maybe sprinkle in your thoughts on, is there a point where, actions speak louder than words, and this, and just the fact that you haven't been able to stick to it is sufficient for you to say, this isn't the right goal for me? Or is it perfectly reasonable to have to iterate and take a few stabs at something and it still might be the right thing or not the right time? Like, I wanted to lift weights or whatever, but I haven't been able to stick to it. At what point do I say, well, that's just not the right thing for me, or that's not the right way I've been going about it? How do I manage the fact that I've said that I wanted to do this thing, I've picked it up a few times, and I just haven't stuck with it? I'm feeling like a failure, but it's still something I feel like I want to do. What does somebody do in that situation?
Yeah, what I would hate the most, oh my gosh, the largest lizard creature on my
Oh,
window.
you're in Texas?
Yes.
Yeah. Because you were friends with Adrian, and that's where I met Adrian as well. I used to live like in Austin, so yeah.
Oh my gosh, oh, there's two. Oh my God, this is crazy. I think one is, this looks like a father-son
They're
type
trying to listen in on the
situation.
podcast, is what they're doing. They're trying to get a
Oh my
sneak
gosh.
preview of the podcast.
Like full distraction there. So sorry.
It's okay.
You guys just hang out over there,
Yeah.
okay? Okay, so yes, falling off, the thing that I would really fear the most in this situation, coming from a mindset perspective, is if, using your example, tried to pick up the strength training thing a few times, I have not been able to be consistent with it, that turns into like a fixed mindset vibe of, I can't do this. It's not possible for me. I'm just not the type of person to strength train. Obviously, clearly, based on the evidence, right? So I would hate that anyone gets to that point. And instead, like again, kind of revisiting what we talked about at the beginning, if this is something that is valuable to you, it's something that you do get satisfaction from, like after the workouts, you feel good and you've noticed changes in your body composition, but you just like keep falling off, get back on, all this stuff. If that's the case, all that stuff is still there, then instead of it being like, well, I'm just not the type of person, this isn't for me, I should find some other kind of exercise to do. Instead, think like, okay, well, why have I not been able to be consistent? And I think where coaches go wrong a lot of the time is they're sort of treating the symptom. And like for those of you listening and are doing this yourself too, like this is definitely relevant, treating the symptom of not sticking to the plan by just changing the plan, doing something different with the plan, going X amount of days or different days of the week or different times or whatever, when the reality is there's probably a root cause that needs to be quote unquote treated, right? So, is that something with your belief system that if you do too much strength training, you might get bulky? And we're kind of like holding on to that. So, even though my coach says I should be going this many days, I'm still like kind of holding myself back because of this belief system. Like, what is going on beneath the surface that is actually causing the lack of consistency, rather than trying to like update the consistency by updating the plan. So that's kind of where my brain goes first. And obviously just using the falling off pieces as data and seeing as that, put your researcher hat on and go, okay, of the times I've fallen off and taken time off of the gym from strength training, what were the consistencies during that time? Was there any like patterns that are similar? What was going on in my life during those times versus the times where I was sticking with it? What made the difference there? And really just trying to like figure out what is actually going on versus just immediately going off of what we do is feelings, you know, like, oh, like I suck. I don't like myself. I hate that I keep doing this. Why can't I stick to it? Why is it so easy for everybody else? Maybe I'm just not meant for it, is to first start with all of those other things.
Yeah, the quote that comes to mind is I just need to do it, right? Is that ever true, or is there ever? I'll be purposefully hyperbolic here. Is this ever true that someone who says, "Well, I just need to do it," are they ever actually onto something? That there is such a thing of like, "Well, I just need to like p proverbially like pick up my pants and belt t tighten up my belt buckle or whatever stupid terminology we want to use and just do it?" Or is that a sign of, is that like always BS and we need to dive deeper? Or is that actually sometimes true?
Yeah, I think it can be true for sure. There's actually, I think the term is like behavioral activation. When we talk about motivation and sticking with things, that how sometimes the motivation comes from doing the thing. You don't need to be motivated first to do the thing. So yeah, absolutely. Especially if it's like something brand new to you, so you're not used to thinking about it, or like you and I, Jordan, will
Sorry,
go
I'm gonna
throughout the
back up, Casey.
day.
I don't want you to go
Yeah.
too far. I mean somebody who has started a habit, not been doing it, and then is saying,
Okay.
and then let's say you're on the call with them and somebody's like, "Hey," yeah, and you're like, "Hey, why have you?" Or let's talk about, we've missed some workouts, like what's going on, you know, do we want to, and they say, "You know, I really just need to do it," you know, like, and what they're saying is that there isn't a why, and that it's a matter of I've just not been doing it and I just need to do it.
I see.
As a first line of defense to the question of like, "Hey, how are you? You know, how is this going? Why, you know," essentially kind of like, why'd you miss so many workouts? I'm like, "Oh, you know, things are going on. I just really need to do it." You know, is that actually ever true, or is it always a sign that we need to chip away at that a little bit?
I would honestly argue that there's, even if it's not something groundbreaking, there probably is still something there, you know, and it's important to not just brush it under the rug as the coach or as yourself in those situations of like, oh, I just know I need to do it. And instead of trying to dive in a little bit more and see what's going on, because it could be something more surface level, like, oh, the reason this is so hard is because we keep trying to go at 5 o'clock in the morning and you hate those early morning workouts and there's no reason you can't go on your lunch break. So like that could be the difference, right? But you won't even get to that unless you ask more questions beyond that. Like, tell me a little bit more about just needing to do it. Like, what would that look like? And like, if it's quote unquote that easy, just do it, then why do you think it hasn't happened yet? You know, asking from like a compassionate way, not trying to make it sound condescending. But yeah, that's kind of where I land with
No,
that.
I totally agree with you. It's funny. I think people can coach in a bunch of different ways. I'm not saying what I'm going to say is what people should do, but sometimes I'll get that and I'll let a client get away with that for a time, you know, and I'll say, okay, like let's, you know, cause me prodding and prying and giving away that I don't believe you, giving away that I really want to pry deeper. You know, that isn't, I think I have a good relationship with my clients, and people will take those lines of questioning well. But sometimes, I don't know. Okay, I'll just ask you, what do you think about letting that go on for a minute or two, you know, until our next call, and seeing if that is in fact true? And almost, I don't want to say letting a client fail, but like, you know, it's the same thing with your kids. Like, controlled failure can be a really useful tool. And so if you're like, hey, like, cool, like we have another call in 2 weeks, and you know, you might be right. Maybe us sitting here today and talking about it is just what you've needed, and that is you gathering that motivation to go and do it. What do you think about kind of letting that play out for a second versus like chipping away at it right in the moment there?
Yeah, no, I love that. Especially if you are speaking to someone who maybe, even whether it's their body language, their tone, or just like how they're discussing things, like, no, I know what I'm supposed to be doing. I just like need to get myself to do it. You might be like, and you going into, well, let's talk about that more because I'm not really sure that may go the opposite direction that you want it to. So yeah, there is no harm, I think, of you saying like, okay, we've talked about this. I like how you presented it of maybe our call today is going to support that. We'll circle back to this in your check-in in like a couple weeks. How does that sound? You know, so now there's also been like a, we're talking about this again. And so if you're talking about it again, at that point, they should be prepared for it to be going somewhere else too.
I love that. That's awesome. That's awesome. Let's some of the classic podcast final wrap-up questions. If somebody wanted to take away, what's the thing you're feeling most passionate about that you feel is the most misunderstood about behavior change? If somebody were to take one thing from either our chat today or something we didn't talk about behavior change, what would it be?
Yeah, honestly, we didn't really get into fully. We talked about motivation a lot, but not the like motivation versus discipline stuff. Like, I still see things all of the time of people saying, very, very large audiences, big names saying, you don't need motivation. You just need to be disciplined all of the time. And that like grinds my academic gears a good bit because we do know motivation really, really matters. And the biggest thing to me, based on the research and based on what we know, is that it's not just a simple like, you just need to get more motivation and be more motivated. It's really looking into like, where is your motivation coming from? Because there is motivation that's less supportive and there's motivation that's far more supportive. If you enjoy going to the gym, that's intrinsic motivation at its finest. Chances are you're going to be pretty motivated to go to the gym and stick with that consistently versus like you're going to the gym because you would feel guilty if you didn't. Your husband would look down on you if you didn't. That's not really like, we'll call it not healthy motivation, is also not really helpful in a long-term sense. So discipline is one of those things where I'm like, it's funny. I feel like the people who are most disciplined are the ones who just have the most intrinsic, self-determined, autonomous motivation, right? And we're actually kind of talking about the same concept. So it may seem like they're just so disciplined, but actually they enjoy what they do. They identify themselves as exercisers. Their personal values and beliefs are tied up in it. So yeah, I think leaving it with that little piece
Okay,
of
okay, okay. We'll
discussion.
have you on for another podcast. Fine. You
Like,
sold
okay,
me.
we got to
No
talk more
problem.
about
You
this one.
mean we didn't cover every single philosophy around behavior change in 55 minutes? This is this unbelievable,
Amazing.
insane.
I know.
I would actually love to talk
Jeez.
about that.
We really need to
As you
do
were saying
better.
it, I was like, wow, that's It's whether it was or wasn't in the notes. I'm happy with the chat we had today. So I really appreciate your time. You're awesome. If you don't follow Casey, go find her on social media. Where can people do that? Learn more about what you're doing, what you're offering, etc.
Yeah, yeah. I mainly hang out on Instagram as far as social media goes. I'm Coach Casey Joe over there. You can find me in all of the other outlets, but that's mainly where I hang out. And honestly, that's where I would go. You can come find the links for some freebies, learn a bit more about all of these different topics that we talked about today, and shoot me a message if you like the episode.
Do you take one-on-one? Are you like, hey, I work with Coach one-on-one, or hey, I have this group sort of mentorship? What's the medium?
Yeah. Yeah. So mainly everything funnels through the Health Mindset Coaching Certification. So that's like bread and butter program. We open for enrollment a couple times per year. It's a live cohort. So we get to chit chat together. We actually just had our final call last night for our 11th cohort, and we are 2 students away from 1,000, which is mind blowing to me. But so that's kind of like the main learning opportunity. I do have like a bunch of fun little like DIY one-off courses and stuff if you just want to get your feet wet, and a lot of free stuff too. So
cool. Very exciting. I will check that out. Thank you so much for your time, Casey.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram @JordanLipsFitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.